It's a glorious Friday morning in Saltburn by the sea, and it's almost time for us to do Book of the Month live. Jenny Finch is with us. Jenny, as the street cleaners are busily sorting their things through in the background, this is your town. You must be so pleased with respect to, obviously, Saltburn on a day like today.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any finer place to be. It's beautiful.
And we've also got a special guest studio audience member for Book of the Month. It's the fabulous Kayleigh Carr. How are you, Kayleigh?
I'm very well, thank you.
Many's the time Jenny has been preparing for the return of Kayleigh to the studio, and when there's been no show, a little face has dropped worse than a Tibetan spaniel after it's been had its food taken away. But she's here, Jenny.
Yes, I don't have to go, ooh, again.
Rob Nichols will be joining us as well. Jenna Warren will be coming in, we hope, because after all, it's her show. And here is Jenna Warren. How are you, Jenna Warren?
I'm fine, thank you.
You see, instantly buttonholed. And you see that constant professionalism, Kayleigh? She actually goes straight into the response, you know, while she's looking for the key to sort the door open, to open it up. Before we actually go in, Jenna, because this is wonderful, can I just draw the listener's attention to this fabulous list of Book Corner bestsellers here? There's one omission, though. No, Jenna Warren. No sign of Jenny Finch.
No, I think...
What's happening? Are they not buying enough books?
Of course they are. I think when authors first come out, that's when their books really sell. And also when they come in and do book launches. So hint, hint to Jenny, when her next book comes out, maybe we could do a launch or something.
I'm sure we can look at that very seriously, Jenna.
Jenna, I know we're blessed by yourself to actually host the Book of the Month again live today. Have you managed to work your way through the Book of Dust?
I have, yes. Only just. Not because I wasn't enjoying it, but because of the...
It's a substantial number.
Yes.
Substantial number of pages. Kayleigh, you haven't as yet, have you?
Unfortunately not, no.
And that's the kind of consistency we've always loved from Kayleigh Cup.
It is indeed. I have to tell you, it's a life-changing book.
Coming up next, the Book of the Month live from Southside Broadcasting in association with Pharmanord at the fabulous Book Corner with Jenna Warren in Saltburn. Assuming Jenna actually opens the door so she could allow us in. It's great stuff. From the delights of sunny Saltburn by the sea and the Book Corner in Saltburn, it's the Book of the Month live.
This month's book is The Book of Dust, La Belle Sauvage by Philip Pullman. La Belle Sauvage is the first part of Philip Pullman's long-awaited return to the world of the critically acclaimed His Dark Materials trilogy. Set in the alternate universe of his earlier books, the novel is a prequel, following the very early life of Lyra, daughter of the mysterious Lord Asriel. The book's hero is Malcolm Polstead, an odd-job boy from the Trout Inn, a clever and enterprising young man. Malcolm is a friend and helper to all, from the Trout's regulars to the nuns at the local priory. Whilst out in his canoe, the Belle Sauvage of the title, Malcolm sees a mysterious man by the canal who is seized and bundled away by agents of the dreaded CCD, the Consistorial Court of Discipline. He drops a secret message that Malcolm retrieves, an action that puts him on the road to a dangerous quest as he is caught up in the mission to save Lyra from the CCD who wish to kill her.
The headquarters of the Secret Service that employed Hannah Ralph was known to his agents as Oakley Street for the simple reason that that respectable Chelsea thoroughfare was nowhere near it and had nothing to do with it at all. That was not known to Hannah, though. She had never been to the headquarters of the service, and as far as she was aware, the words Oakley Street, wherever that was, meant no more than a straightforward address. Apart from Professor Papadimitriou, almost her only contact with the service was the acorn. She gathered it with its query, and left it with her reply in one of a number of different hiding places Oakley Street called left luggage boxes. The person who left it for her and took it away again, the late Mr. Luckhurst, was known as an insulator. Neither of them knew the other, which meant that they wouldn't be able to reveal anything if questioned. The one other way of talking to her directors was through a cataloguer at Bodley's Library. What she had to do was submit a query about the catalogue number of a particular book, which would tell him that she wanted to pass a message to Oakley Street. The book didn't matter, but the author's name did. The first letter of the surname was a code that indicated the matter she wanted to talk about. Accordingly, she submitted her query on the official form, and the following day she received a note inviting her to meet the cataloguer, Harry Dibdin, in his office at 11 a.m. Dibdin was a thin, sandy-coloured man, whose demon was a bird of some tropical kind Hannah didn't know. He shut the door and lifted a pile of books off the visitor's chair before offering her a cup of coffee. "Cataloguing queries can take time," he said, "and we always pay scrupulous attention to the views of distinguished scholars." "In that case, I'd like some coffee, thank you," she said. He plugged in an anabaric kettle and fussed with some cups. "You can talk in here with perfect confidence," he said. "No one can hear us at all. You wanted to contact Oakley Street. What's it about?" "My insulator has been murdered, I'm pretty sure of that, by the CCD. For the time being, I've got no way of contacting my clients."
As in the previous three books, the world Pullman creates is flawless. Close enough to be recognisable, yet different enough to capture the imagination. His vision of Lyra's universe is a masterclass in creativity and internal consistency. The most fascinating aspect of this world is the demon, an animal companion bonded to each person that is both guide and, in some sense, their soul. Demons grow and change form as a person matures, until settling into a creature that reflects the underlying character of their other half. One particularly gruesome scene near the opening of La Belle Sauvage is a fight between two demons. The loser is terrified, and her owner is broken by the emotions and fear he receives from his companion. In this, and other ways, La Belle Sauvage is a much darker book than any of the previous trilogy.
At about the same time, George Papadimitriou was standing at the window of one of his rooms at the top of Pilgrim's Tower, the highest set in Jordan College, and looking out at the waste of waters that surrounded the tower and lapped against the windows of the other college buildings. Even in the enclosed quadrangle, the wind was whipping it into spray. The sky was heavy, promising even more rain, and the room was so cold that in spite of the fire in the hearth, he was wearing his heavy overcoat. "When should we expect him, do you think?" he said. "In this flood," said Lord Nugent, joining him at the window. "Who knows? But he's resourceful." Nugent had arrived in Oxford the previous evening, an hour or two before the flood struck the city. Oakley Street had heard that Lyra was in danger, and he wanted to make sure of the arrangements for her safety. He would have made his way to the Priory already that morning, despite the flood, but for the fact that they were awaiting the arrival of a traveller from the far north, Bud Schlesinger, news of whom had been in Coram Van Texel's coded letter from Uppsala. Schlesinger was a New Dane by birth and an agent of Oakley Street by training and inclination. He had gone to the north to find out as much as he could about the witch's knowledge of Lyra, because it seemed that the source of much that was said about her came from them. The witches were a great power in those latitudes, and the alliances they made were costly, but valuable. Nugent was eager to gain their support, but even more eager to prevent the other side from gaining it. "I should think every boat that exists will have been requisitioned by the authorities," said Papadimitriou. "They would want to maintain civil order above anything else." "Oh, he'll get here. Until he does, I'm going to..." "Wait a minute. Isn't that Hannah Ralph down there?" Papadimitriou peered down at the flooded quadrangle, where a slight figure clothed in oilskins was wading waist-deep towards the tower. She looked up briefly, pushing back her yellow sou'wester, and the two men recognised her at once. Papadimitriou waved, but she didn't see him, and she moved on through the water. "I'll go down and meet her," Papadimitriou said. He ran down the steep stairs and found her on the first landing, breathing heavily and unfastening the oilskin coat. Her little demon was helping with the buttons. "Let me give you a hand," he said. "Good Lord, what are you wearing?"
The novel is both an exciting adventure and a book that addresses deep philosophical questions. In its most simple form, it is a chase, Malcolm's need to escape with Lyra and deliver her to a place of safety. Underlying that is the universal theme of good versus evil. And here, some of Pullman's more controversial views begin to emerge. The open-minded, scientifically thinking group of Lord Asriel are the good side, with the religious institutions, and specifically the CCD, depicted as the villains. This conflict is the basis of his previous trilogy and caused much controversy in some quarters, with demonstrations outside some cinemas in the United States by groups claiming the film of the first book was anti-Christian and even a work of the devil. Undaunted by this, Pullman has produced a book that is even more emphatic in its message. Ostensibly written for children, it can be read and enjoyed for its many layered meanings by young adults and adults alike. It is beautifully written, of course, and both returns to Pullman's fascinating world and adds to it. La Belle Sauvage is a novel that can be read in isolation, but it will not disappoint any of the many readers of his dark materials.
And there we have it, and you can tell it's actually live because obviously lots of activity is going on in the book corner as we speak, which is wonderful. It's great to see people sort of engaging in that process. Fantastic. We can welcome, as I say, to the Book of the Month, our studio audience at least, Kayleigh Carr. Kayleigh, I know you haven't read Philip Pullman's The Book of Dust, but from what Jenny's just reviewed, is it something that appeals? Is it something that catches your attention? I mean, to share with us whether you think yes, or is it a case of, frankly, it's just too big for me, I'm just a small lass?
Looking at it is a very thick book, something I don't normally tend to read. It does sound interesting, a lot different to what I'm used to. I do thoroughly enjoy reading Nicholas Sparks books because they're all like romance, love, typical girly girl. But yeah, it does seem interesting, very different.
Okay, well that may or may not change after we've actually heard the views of obviously Jenna Warren, the owner of the Book Corner, indeed temporary host of the Book of the Month show for Southside Broadcasting. Rob Nichols is with us as well. Rob, I know you visibly paled when I actually handed you the book last week live on air during a Fly Me to the Moon podcast.
Yeah.
Thinking, is that a weapon that I actually need to use when I go down to Birmingham or whatever? Obviously not. What did you make of it? Did you work your way through it? And bearing in mind, as you said, it's the Book of Dust, Volume 1. Almost there, I see, by the book.
Yeah.
Almost there.
Yeah. There was a few other distractions this week. No, it isn't quite as daunting a read as it looks when you see this massive Bible.
I couldn't have slipped that through your letterbox.
No, absolutely. You do get into it very easily and has a lot of, I was going to say undercurrents, but that's probably the wrong word, but it's a flood
nice
and everything.
Nice touch.
But it has a brilliant human story, and then set against that you've got all these sinister things. I've just been to Cambodia recently and went to see lots of things to do with Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge, and you see there where everybody informs on everybody else, and you have that sinister part of the story where the school kids are the deliberately
the Order of Saint Alexander.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Not through the parents, but the kids are there to sort of spy on each other. Oh. And it reminds you of the 1930s in Germany, or indeed in Cambodia with Pol Pot, really.
And again, the naivety in which they're signed up for this particular order.
Yes.
By effectively seeing themselves as being rewarded.
Well, they love the badge, don't they?
Exactly. A nice shiny badge from that perspective. Lots of, again, deep sort of aspects, and that's just one of them. Jenna, from your own perspective, even though I know you're tempted to do Ready Player One or indeed other sort of areas, which we'll come to in the fullest time, what did you make of Philip Pullman's Book of Dust, Volume 1?
Well, I wasn't sure whether it was something that I wanted to read.
I sensed that from the email correspondence. I thought I was choosing the Book of Mother this way.
And I don't quite know why, because I read his Dark Materials trilogy and I really enjoyed those. But when this came out, I couldn't quite bring myself to get swept up in the excitement of it, and I don't really know why. But I was so pleased that I did. I really enjoyed it. It really took me by surprise how dark it was. But when it brought a lot back about the original trilogy. And when I actually sort of sat down and thought about the original trilogy, there's parts of that which are really quite dark as well. I thought the thing that was most interesting about it was, like, for about the first half, it felt like a bit like a sort of espionage thriller. And then sort of halfway through, it sort of turns into a bit of a sort of more of like an adventure sort of fantasy sort of race against time sort of story. And I thought that was very interesting. The world in it's fascinating. I love the demons. I'm really, it's a small thing, but I'm always really impressed by the brilliant names that Philip Pullman manages to invent. I think if it was me, I'd be calling them things like sort of Smith and Jones, and he's so imaginative. I thought it was great, and I was really glad I read it.
I'm going to say something slightly heretical now, which in the words of the Magisterium might probably get me sort of arrested and do all sorts of things. I'm going to say I actually prefer Philip Pullman's take on this particular area of fantasy to J.K. Rowling's. And I know that the Book of Dust was, before that whole Dust and Dark Materials trilogy, was originally billed very much by Hollywood as the thing which is going to take over from Harry Potter. Sadly, as Jenny alluded to in the debrief there, one of the challenges was it was seen as being anti-Christian. I don't think it is. I think it's an observation. I think you can see it certainly as a critique of Catholicism, a critique of any kind of organisation. But at the same time, I actually think that it just raises a whole range of issues, which is human beings, whether we have souls that are internal or whether they're external or whether they're just literally part of a multiverse of experiences. It's just part of the whole thing. I think that's what I like about it. It's characterisation, as you say, I think was excellent. I love the demons, I love the way they kind of interconnect with various folk. I love the way in which Malcolm is kind of thrust into an adventure. And he has to grow up pretty quickly. So you've got that kind of Romans built, that Bildsromung, the notion of a coming-of-age story, which some of the best narratives are actually all about. And no matter what age you are, I think you can start beginning to identify with some of the sort of areas that we're going through. As well as, of course, his underlying romance with Lucy. Is it Lucy who's...
Alice.
Alice, yes, yeah. Exactly. No, I haven't read it at all, obviously. that line from that. I mean, Rob, how did you find the sort of characters were being portrayed and various other things?
I really like the very rounded characters, and Malcolm, he's, as you say, incredibly resourceful and very quick to take things on board. Yeah. But then you've got the different characters of the very different characters of the different nuns, yeah. and the people that come into the pub. So you've got an awful lot of people in the book, but that it doesn't seem to burden you.
Is prior knowledge an asset? Because clearly we know, if we've read the upcoming trilogy, the Dark Materials trilogy, or indeed if we've seen the movie, which again I think was underrated at the time and was well produced with Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig, we know what's going to happen to Lyra. This is Lyra as a baby, this is as a child, this is working through that. One's tempted to say, is this Philip Pullman's attempt to do for his particular work what George Lucas did with the Star Wars universe, in which we have a prequel? And can we look forward to, in the Book of Dust, Volume 2, Jar Jar Binks emerging? Jenny?
I think that's highly unlikely.
Oh, pity. Shared universe. I was hopeful that might occur. But anyway... In terms of the prequel, though, does it impact at all? Because, I mean, there is that line, and I'm also say, wearing your own writer's hat from Alex Hastings, would you ever consider writing a prequel to say what happened to Alex Hastings before she actually entered the social service?
Not that far back, but I have drafted out a prequel for her first 4 or 5 months in Somerset. As far as this is concerned, it's very difficult for me to say how effective it is if you haven't already read his Dark Materials, because I have, and in fact I reread it before I read the Book of Dust. So for me, it flows seamlessly. It fits in like an extra piece of the jigsaw. But I don't know how someone who hadn't read his Dark Materials would react to it, possibly differently.
Rob, Had you read his Dark Materials, or were you coming to it completely cold?
I haven't read it.
So how would, there we are.
Over to you.
You're the perfect person to respond.
So, yeah, I wasn't aware that I was missing out and that there was gaps in knowledge. It didn't refer to other things as far as I could see.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
The man's very good.
And clearly we need to ask Kaylee the question once again. Having heard what Jenna and Rob and Jenny and myself have actually thought about the whole thing, is it the kind of thing which when you leave the book corner today and you rush to find your parents somewhere in the Saltburn seafront, probably looking to find out, why can't we use the Saltburn funicular lift? Because it's all locked away. And I was devastated about that as well. It'll be back, I'm sure, before too long. And there are lots of other things we'll talk about as well happening in Saltburn, including, of course, the Independent Bookshop Week of the 16th and 23rd of June. Would you, Kaylee, actually go for Philip Pullman's The Book of Dust, Volume 1, La Belle Sauvage?
Well, as you know, I don't really read that often, as probably often as I should. It does look, by obviously the
size.
Yeah, the size of it, it looks pretty daunting. But I think everything you've said about it, it is something different to what I'm used to. It does sound interesting. It is appealing. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
I know we hate this part, anyway, Philip Pullman's already won an award for Book of Dust, and he's obviously going to win several more. And lots of excitement when it was actually produced from that point of view. But it's time for Scores on the Doors. So, Jenna, what would you give Philip Pullman's The Book of Dust, Volume 1, La Belle Sauvage?
9.
Mm-hmm. Rob?
8.5.
And I'm also going 8.5. Jenny?
9.
So not quite a full 10. Extraordinary. We have another tale of a young soul coming up, I think, for the next book of the month. And it is the wonderful Abigail Tartlin and...
the wonderfully titled... Dead Girls.
And finally, Jenna, before we leave this particular episode of Book of the Month, with added cameo appearances from some of your customers, which is wonderful.
Yes.
That's always great. We don't shush them here on Southside Broadcasting. We say, well, come in, shout as much as you want. It's all great. Just share with us how people can get in touch with your good self via the Independent Bookshop Week between the 16th and 23rd of June. Obviously, around all summer and all year, actually, at the Book Corner. But what sort of things have you got in mind for that?
Right. Well, for Independent Bookshop Week, it's as it sounds, it's a celebration of independent bookshops, and at the moment I have planned on the Saturday the 16th I have a special story time all themed around the tiger who came to tea, because it's its 50th anniversary this year, scarily. So we're going to have cake and we're going to do a little story time, and so that's going to be at 11 o'clock and again at 2 o'clock on that day. And another nice thing about that week is to have the Independent Bookshop Week Awards, which are shortlisted by independent booksellers. So we'll be basically displaying the shortlists and announcing the winners when that's posted as well. And the best way, I would say, of keeping an eye on what I'm doing is to look on my Facebook page, which is BookCon Saltburn. Also on Twitter, at BookCon Shop. And I've also got the BookCon website as well. So there, but definitely Facebook, I would say, would be the best place to look.
Fantastic. And before we close Book of the Month for May 2018... Kaylee, you've not just been a fine studio audience member, but you're also doing another 5K run. I say another one because you've done a 10K run. How can people support you in doing that? What's it for and why are you doing it?
So in June, I'm taking part in the Race for Life, raising money for cancer research. I'm taking part with my sister. Hopefully a bit easier than the 10K. And you can sponsor me at justgiving.com/Kaylee Carr.
You've been listening to the Book of the Month live from, as we said, sunny Saltburn. And actually, it's one of the first times we've actually had sun in Saltburn when we've actually been doing a Book of the Month. So obviously, we're working on that particular basis. And at the Book Corner in Saltburn, in which street in Saltburn?
It's Milton Street.
There we are, in association with Farm and Ord. We thank you.